Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Budhle Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschati Desatarine Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tribhyascha Kipa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we'll be hearing about the glories of Srila Prabhupada. Now it's been 35 days since we heard about Prabhupada's departure from Calcutta. And on this 17th of September, Srila Prabhupada, he's writing in his diary. He says that they reached the Bermuda area and they turned the wheel to go northwest now. That's up the coast of the Atlantic Ocean of the United States. It took them an extra day, and Prabhupada, of course, now after 35 days at the sea, he had crossed over so many oceans, so many seas, three continents. Now finally he was seeing the American coastline. It would take another day. The day started out sunny and bright, but then just as here, we can notice, about 4 o'clock every day, especially during the rainy season, the rain starts, there's sometimes undies. So that time of day, also on the Atlantic Ocean, 4 o'clock, suddenly a fog came down. And nothing could be seen, they had to stop the boat. So Prabhupada by this time was used to that, but he was just praying. He said, be Lord Krishna pleased to get out this fog. So Prabhupada, this was his last day on the boat. Finally, you'll see this boat here. It's not the boat that we usually see when we see the picture of the Jaladuta. It's a much bigger boat. So this was found out afterwards. There were actually three Jaladutas. And the first Jaladuta, it was only kept for about 1 or 2 years. The second Jaladuta that we usually see, along with Prabhupada, that was scrapped in 1953, long before Prabhupada took his journey. This is the actual Jaladuta, this very large boat that was brought from Germany. It had a big auspicious swastika on the front of it. And this was the boat that Srila Prabhupada took to America. So after 2 or 3 hours of the fog, finally they reached the port of Boston safely at 5:30 in the morning on the 17th of September. So this at that time it was Friday. They were there at the port, a special pier called Commonwealth Port, which actually was very historically famous in America for revolutions. Just like here in India at that time, it was 1965, the Indian nation had only had less than 20 years of independence. After what was supposed to be nonviolent, finally, the English, they released the colony of India and it became an independent nation. So this particular Commonwealth pier where Prabhupada landed was the starting point of the revolution of America that ended in its independence in 1776, nearly 200 years earlier. So America had had, by that time, almost 200 years of independence. And you can see now, 75 years of independence of India, how India has come up materially and also spiritually. Because when Prabhupada left India, he never wanted to come back. He couldn't get any followers, he couldn't get a single child that he could train. Nobody wanted to cooperate with him. So then he came to America to fulfill his spiritual master's instruction. And by that time, America, having almost 2 years of independence, they were ready for spiritual life because they had already come to the pinnacle of material life. Everything there was prosperous. So now Prabhupada, Krishna, his spiritual master, was sending Prabhupada just like a match. One tiny little match was just a, it's just a little piece of wood. One small match, when lit, can burn an entire forest. So Prabhupada, being that match, that catalyst, he came to this very place where the revolution of America started, and now started a spiritual revolution from the Commonwealth pier. So they couldn't immediately land, because now, being the first place that Prabhupada entered America, he had to go through, just like we do, immigrations, check the passport, check the visa, everything, his sponsor, everything, all the papers had to be shown. Finally, by 10 o'clock in the morning, Captain Pandya, he offered to take Prabhupada around to see the city of Boston. Now, Prabhupada was here on a mission. Captain Pandya didn't actually understand who he had brought to America. He was actually the ambassador of spiritual ambassador of India. And this first landing, this was Prabhupada's first impression of America. Just like anywhere we go, it's said that first impressions last longest. So what did Prabhupada see in Boston? Well, we have one of our senior most disciples of Srila Prabhupada, that's Satsarup Das Goswami, who was with Prabhupada from the very earliest days of 26 Second Avenue. Now he put into, after doing all the research to write the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, he poeticized all of Prabhupada's pastimes. I'm just going to read, interspersed, a few of the poetic expressions of how Srila Prabhupada first saw America. So here's one stanza. As the boat entered Boston Harbor, no one expected the extent of the change to come. But history was changing from no pure devotee in the West to one. Because many yoga societies, Ramakrishna Mission and the Kripalu, they had sent their representatives to America, but with very little effect. Mostly they were going there for their own material gain, not so much to give spiritual knowledge. So there was no pure devotee who had yet reached the shores of America, and Srila Prabhupada was the first. Now when Prabhupada, he came off of the Jaladuta, Captain Pandya, who had been there many, many times before, he navigated Prabhupada into the city of Boston. His awe heightened before the task, he drew closer to Krishna's grace. Why have you brought me here? This is what Prabhupada thought when he first saw America. How could Captain Pandya know as he took his saintly passenger on a short walk through Boston? Only Krishna could hear as Prabhupada spoke with hope and helplessness. I am your puppet. Make me dance, make me dance. So this bhajan that we just sang, this was written after Prabhupada had his tour of Boston. After he got a little glimpse, just like when you're cooking rice, you just have to pick up one grain, feel that grain, and you know, then you know what the whole pot is going to be like. So Prabhupada, when he entered Boston, and you, maybe you've noticed that at the ports, it's not the most beautiful place. It's where the sailors and the merchants come, and there's a lot of dirt and a lot of coming and going. It's not where the people live, actually. So with early morning mist lifting, he saw the dead-spirited city, the dirty streets and buildings, the victims of Kali Yuga going to work. By that time in the morning, everyone was racing, going to work. And he grew anxious. How could he even talk with them? How could he change them? Prabhupada was here on a big mission. So now Prabhupada, having had a slight tour of Boston for a few hours, he had to come back on the ship, and they had to wait till the next day to proceed on to New York. So This year, because every year we celebrate this auspicious day, and every year, going deeper and deeper, just like a jewel mine, we find more and more information about this particular day and Prabhupada's arrival in America. So this year, I discovered the letters that Prabhupada had written when he first arrived in America, which I had never seen before, actually. Mostly we would go to the Lilamrita, and we would go to Prabhupada's Jaladutta diary. And these letters Prabhupada wrote to the people closest to him. And some of them were, for instance, he wrote to his eldest son, Prayagraj, who had been with him since childhood, going to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He wrote to Sumati Murarji, who had been his greatest supporter throughout this entire journey. He wrote to Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, trying to encourage him somehow or other to carry on the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and fulfill his goal to spread Hare Krishna all over the world. And he wrote here to the Keshav Gaudiya Math, because his godbrother, Keshav Maharaj, had awarded him with sannyas, and he had become friendly with the other Math members there. So we'll see the letter, and you'll see that it's addressed to Keshav Gaudiya Math at Kanstila. If any of you have ever gone there, you go a up a very narrow staircase. Just behind the Keshav Gaudiya Math is a place where Krishna killed Kansa on a big hill. So that's a Kansatila. So he wrote to Narayan Maharaj. And he wrote, because they were both sannyasis, and he was trying to encourage not only Narayan Maharaj, but many other of the godbrothers and sannyasis at the Math, you come here. And he was telling them all about what he was seeing in America. So this Commonwealth Pier, Prabhupada, we know, we've heard about Prabhupada starting all of his struggles in New York City, and then he went on to California. And then the next temple that he started was in Boston, because he had seen Boston. And he sent Satsrup Maharaj there, practically all alone. Satsrup Maharaj got another job in a welfare office. He set up a temple in a very bad part of town. They broke into the temple. They stole whatever was there. And then they went to a better place and a better place. And what Prabhupada did in Boston was, just as his spiritual master, he wasn't only interested in establishing temples. The first thing he did was he established the printing press in Boston. And he made an art department in Boston. So Prabhupada was constantly thinking, because that was one of the instructions his spiritual master gave him. If you ever get money, print books. So along with temples, Prabhupada side by side was establishing the printing of his books, and that he did in Boston. Not only did he do that in Boston, but he established the first Radha Krishna deities, Radha Ballabh. And another first was, it was the first place where he initiated Western Brahmins, both men and women. So this was a very special place, Boston, within the ISKCON history. Many firsts. And every year you'll see the devotees come, they bring a murti of Prabhupada, and they celebrate this day at the Commonwealth Pier. This is one of those celebrations. So now Srila Prabhupada, having seen a section of America, they had to continue their trip. He was describing in his diary what he saw of Boston, how materially unbelievable. He had never seen such skyscrapers and the lights and the overpasses and the bridges and the beautiful canals. It was nothing like India at that time, because they had so many years of independence to develop. So he was writing in his diary, I passed under bridges, I went on overpasses, I saw the canal, now we're coming down. Again, there was fog, and now Americans were coming onto the ship. He was getting to speak to the Americans. He met two very nice gentlemen. He spoke to them. He was getting an idea, just a little taste, of what he was to expect once he landed in New York. So they landed 3 hours late because of fog. at 12:30 in the afternoon, which was just as well, because the next place he had to go was the Port Authority. Now, Port Authority is the harbor, the buses, the trains. It's all controlled by the Port Authority in New York City. Whoever enters the country, whoever enters the city, they have to do transportation somewhere. So Prabhupada, he said that when he landed at the port, his books were there, he saw them unloading. He didn't know whether to turn left or to turn right. He had no idea where to go. So he called Gopal Agarwal in Butler, Pennsylvania. And Gopal Agarwal, he had arranged, it was very, like we have our welcome center, very efficiently organized. He had sent from the Traveler's Aid, a society, to escort Prabhupada. You see this big building. It's gigantic. This is the Port Authority bus terminal. Now, just because Prabhupada put his lotus feet at this Port Authority bus terminal, hundreds of devotees afterwards were created from this Port Authority bus terminal. We started preaching there. The devotees would come, bring prasadam, bring books. It became like a second temple in New York City. So this is where Prabhupada was brought. And he had to wait till 5 o'clock in the afternoon in this bus terminal. Finally, at 5 o'clock, he boarded the bus, and it was a 9-hour bus ride. He hadn't eaten. He was writing to Narayan Maharaj. He said, all I had was some murti, and that's all I had on the bus for 9 hours. And finally, 2:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, he reached Butler, Pennsylvania. So this is the trip that he took. It was along NH-80. NH-80 goes from East Coast to the West Coast. You can keep driving and you hit the Pacific Ocean. So Prabhupada went 9 hours on that. And he was so amazed at the highways, because there were no highways at that time in India. He couldn't believe it. He said for 500 miles, there was a steady stream, nonstop, of cars, all going 100 kilometers per hour, nonstop. There was no stopping, no small streets, nothing. 9 hours straight, he drove and saw the beauty of the highways, the cleanliness, the prosperity, and really he was amazed. He felt that America was just ready for spiritual life, because materially they had attained the summum bonum. They had everything. And now, because when you're hungry, you can't think of spiritual life. You only think of filling your belly. And when you're distressed, you just want to you want to get out of your distress. But when you have everything, then you can think, well, maybe there's something more than this, because I'm not fully satisfied. So he saw that America was ready for the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Satsrup Maharaj, he wrote, Boston was heavy, but Bhagavatam was the heaviest. So now Prabhupada, he had this mission to bring about the spiritual revolution, and he was starting in a completely unknown, insignificant little small town in America called Butler. Although we were born in Pennsylvania, we had never heard of Butler. Just a small little town. Now, how did this happen? When Srila Prabhupada took sannyas here in Mathura, immediately Keshav Maharaj, just like Prabhupada did, he said, preach, preaching, preaching, preaching. This is what the work of the sannyasis. So Keshav Maharaj said, you go out and preach now. So he would go to Agra and preach. And he was even making disciples there. And one gentleman, he had a preaching program at his house, Mr. Agarwal. Mr. Agarwal was confiding in Prabhupada that my son, he went to America and he got entrapped by an English girl there and he never came back. And when Prabhupada heard that he had a son in America, he said, oh, well, I want to go to America. My spiritual master told me to preach there. Why don't you ask your son to sponsor me? So from the viewpoint of the father, he had been entrapped by an English girl, and that's why he never came back. But quite honestly, I'll just tell you a personal experience. When I went to the university, because they met at the university and then they married, they were the same age, just about. I was there for 2 days, and an Indian senior student, engineering student, he met me, and within 5 minutes, he asked me if I would marry him. And I said, well, I don't know your name. He said, well, that's all right. I want to settle in America. I want to know if you'll marry me. So a lot of times, because so few Indians were able to come to America in the 60s, they made it so difficult. So Gopal Agarwal, he was very fortunate. He married a wonderful woman named Sally. She took his name, Sally Agarwal. They had two beautiful children, and they were living a very peaceful life in Butler, Pennsylvania. He was an engineer, electrical engineer. And when Prabhupada landed in Butler, there was Gopal waiting. Prabhupada had sent him a picture of himself so he would recognize him, just in case there were a lot of sannyasis standing at the... So he got into Gopal's car. They drove for about an hour to Butler. And there was nowhere for Prabhupada to stay. He had to stay on the... You see this little picture here. Prabhupada had to stay for that first night on their living room sofa. And then in the morning, they realized they have to find somewhere for Prabhupada to stay. They had him rent a room at the YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association, because it was like a dharmshala. And Sally turned out to be his number one best supporter, his best devotee. Because when she was so impressed by Prabhupada, his gentlemanliness, and he reminded her of like a father-in-law. So she immediately saw an opportunity that I have to help him in his mission. And every day she made programs for him in the churches, in the colleges, in the Christian schools, in the societies, in the Rotary clubs, the Lion clubs. Prabhupada was busy every single day giving lectures for an hour or an hour and a half. And then the people who were interested, he would have house programs at the Agarwal's living room. They would come and ask questions about spiritual life. He would give Bhagavad Gita classes. So Prabhupada, he landed running. He just started preaching immediately, and he was seeing that even in this little town of Butler, Pennsylvania, the people were so eager for spiritual life. So we have just a few little pictures here. Prabhupada, being a father himself, he was so affectionate to the little son who they named Brudge. So he was teaching them how to walk and say a few words. And then Prabhupada, of course, he would have to cook. He had brought his three-tiered cooker with him. And when Sally and Gopal saw that he was cooking, well, they wanted what he cooked too because it was so delicious. So he was cooking for them as well. He was making chapatis, and Gopal appreciated, you know, he's from Agra. He loved getting, it was the first time he had chapatis in America. So Prabhupada was cooking for them as well. But he had to cook in their kitchen where they were cooking meat. And Prabhupada was so tolerant. He said, right in their refrigerator was the meat right next to what I had to cook. And Sally would bring him to the supermarkets. And he couldn't believe it. You had freshly cut up already vegetables frozen. You just had to put them in a pot. He was just amazed. It was like magic. So then Prabhupada, he was writing to Tirtha Maharaj and the other people here in India. You know, he had to have some contact because he didn't know anyone in America, so he was writing letters and telling them what he was experiencing. And he was saying that this is such an expensive country that right now I'm only eating morti and peanuts, and I wanted to find some mustard oil because if you don't cook morti, you have to have something to help it digest. He had to go 20 miles in a car to find 250 grams of mustard oil, because nobody cooks with mustard oil in America. And it cost him 5 rupees. 5 rupees then was a lot. You know, so he just couldn't believe how expensive the country was. And remember, he came with 40 rupees. 40 rupees you couldn't exchange in America. There was no foreign exchange because no Indians came to America. He brought back that same 40 rupees when he went back and gave it to his son later. So the way he was making money was he had brought 200 sets of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was selling those Bhagavatams to the interested people in America. And that way he was able to support himself. He only stayed 21 days in Butler because he knew he wasn't going to start a world revolution from Butler, Pennsylvania. He always had his eyes on New York City. Everyone else wanted to go to London. Prabhupada just, he said that sometimes he was even dreaming that he was in New York City. So he said farewell to the Agarwals, and he wanted to take that bus ride back. He thought on the way back he would stop at another big city, Philadelphia. He made some appointments with Sanskrit professors there, gave them his books. Prabhupada was always thinking, how could he preach? How could he distribute books? So Gopal, understanding that he was sannyasi, gave him a sock. And inside of that sock, he put coins in there because he knew that at the bus stations, Prabhupada would want to take a shower and you could use those coins for the public showers. So Gopal and Sally, they were Krishna sent to help him on his path. They were so worried about him. So Prabhupada, he left there, he came, he finally reached New York, and he wrote a letter. He said, there's so many, the houses there are 20 to 30 stories high. Even here, and when we built our guest house, it was, what, 3 stories high? It was the tallest building in the whole area. So he had never seen anything like this. And not only that, the lights. He said at nighttime, everything is lit up and you think it's daytime. So he was just like a little child seeing all these amazing material prosperities of America and writing back to India. Actually, he was writing back to India to lure them, to come here, you know, come and help me. It's amazing here, you know. It's like if you go to another planet. Yeah, you got to come here. You got to see how amazing this place is. So he was writing them. He says, if you want to come, you just contact me. Because he needed help. It was one person against a whole nation. So he was writing and telling everyone about these things. This is the way Butler looked. Very different from a city. And Prabhupada, he slightly quoted a sloka from the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.3. When Pariksit Maharaj was getting ready to leave the world, he asked, what is my duty? And Sukadeva Goswami, he gave a reply. He said that in the material world, the lifetime of such an envious householder is passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime, either in making money or maintaining family members. So in this age of Kali, in other ages, the demons were on different planets, then different countries, then different families. But now, Prabhupada explains that in every house there's a Hiranyakashipu, and they think this is their kingdom. So in these small towns, like Butler, you see very beautiful big houses. And each person inside of their house, they were the lord, these were their subjects, their family, and you know that it was all set up like that. And their daytimes were spent in making money, and their nighttimes were spent in sleeping and indulgence. So Prabhupada saw it like that. He understood that this is the material world where you can enjoy it, forgetting about Krishna all you wanted for as many lifetimes as you wanted. And then Prabhupada also noticed, he said, and this is something else that wasn't in India, there was television. Television, he said, was able to bring the entire world together while you're just sitting in your room. So he gave the example that just then the Pope had come from Rome, and the entire country was able to watch the Pope in Rome on the television. So he was just amazed at all of the conveniences and all of the advancements that he was seeing now in America. But he was most, although he could get everything vegetarian, he noticed that people could not live without meat in that country. And he said that even in the Agarwal's home, Sally was feeding this little baby meat powder. So he knew that he had to begin preaching very strongly and help people understand the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's Prabhupada cooking in Sally's kitchen and how he was able to win their hearts with his prasadam. Now, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, Prabhupada, he only brought one little suitcase with some chira and a change of clothes. But he had at the docks in New York 200 sets of the three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. And as soon as he reached New York, he began going to the different bookshops and putting his books. And that way he was able to maintain himself. First, Dr. Mishra, he gave him a place to stay. But Prabhupada, because Dr. Mishra was teaching impersonalist philosophy, Prabhupada knew he could not remain under his shelter. So he rented a little room. He began his own classes. He began distributing Srimad Bhagavatam to the students and doing programs in different societies, the Indian Embassy, the cultural associations. And that way he was able to build up a following of students, and he was able to distribute his books. Until one day, everything was stolen from him. And this is one of the letters that Prabhupada wrote. He wrote in Bengali. So the letters that we're reading now actually are godbrother Bhumipati. He's been translating all of these letters. This is probably why we haven't been able to see these letters before, because he's gradually translating all of the Bengali letters that Prabhupada has written. So they're now available on the newest versions of the archives, the Veda base. So these Bengali letters, Prabhupada's giving a description. And he said that when he was preaching, especially in the Christian, even in the churches and the schools, the priests were very worried. He wouldn't let them, they wouldn't let him talk for a long time because they were afraid that he would influence their students. And Prabhupada said, but they have to understand that in every culture there's religion. And every religion is the same, to worship the Supreme Lord. I'm not teaching anything new, but it's understandable that they were very concerned that I not try to convert them into what they thought was Hinduism. So he understood that, and therefore he had to become independent in his preaching. So one of his students invited him that you come stay at the Bowery. The Bowery was like the bowels of New York City. It was where all the derelicts lived and the drunkards. But Prabhupada took up, and he made the best of it. He was able to get a following there. Even many of the people who came to Prabhupada in the Bowery, they later took initiation from Prabhupada at 26 Second Avenue. Karlapati, Mukunda, Janaki, his first disciples. So from the Bowery, he then came to 26 Second Avenue. $200 a month, and he had no source of income. But immediately, the devotees, they came forward, "We'll help you, Prabhupada." They called him Swamiji then. So he was visiting different cultural societies. He went to see the Ramakrishna Mission. He saw that nothing was going on there. He went to other yoga societies, such as Dr. Mishra's. Nothing was going on there because they weren't teaching the pure teachings of the Vedas. And he also went to cultural exhibits, dance performances of Bharatanatyam. And he saw that there were big gatherings there of the cultural Indian associations. Not so much in the yoga societies. It was just old ladies and things like that. But in these cultural institutes, there the people were coming to see the artwork, the dancing. So Prabhupada felt, I have to inculcate this into my preaching, because this is actually Lord Chaitanya's mission, this chanting and dancing. So he wrote to Tirtha Maharaj, I want to bring a whole Sankirtan party from India and start this Sankirtan movement. Of course, he got no response whatsoever. So what did Prabhupada do? What did Krishna do for Prabhupada? With Prabhupada sitting under a tree at Tompkins Square Park, his students, they automatically stood up and started to sing and dance. And that way, there under the tree in Tompkins Square Park, Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement was started. So here we have, none of you will recognize him, with the boy with the beads, that's our skinny little Brahmananda. And then the first devotee who put on a, who was brave enough to put on a dhoti and kurta, a dhoti and top, that was Kirtananda. Now Kirtananda, he went to the draft board like that when they tried to put him in the army, and they put him into a mental institute. So that's why he missed the first initiations. He had to take initiation a month later because he was in a mental institute. So this is how the Americans first saw dhotis and kurtas. So, and then behind him is Achyutananda. Achyutananda came to India. He lived here. He learned Bengali. He learned all the beautiful singing. His singing was, it just brought us to India. It was just so beautiful. So these first devotees of Srila Prabhupada, they started the Sankirtan movement with his, he showed them how to dance, the Swami step, and then they just followed Prabhupada. And then they, even when Prabhupada had to leave to go back to, Prabhupada came back in 1967 after he had his stroke. And when did he come back? He came back in May and June, the same time that everybody runs away from Vrindavan. Prabhupada came back in May and June because that heat is so therapeutic. He knew that heat would cure him. So he came here and then immediately went back and started the California Temple, the Boston Temple, and the Montreal Temple. Again, he just couldn't stop. And he didn't leave again until 1970. Now, at that time, in the 60s, Srila Prabhupada and America, they were experiencing the Cold War. The Cold War was the communists, that's the Russian bloc. They had already taken over many, many countries in Europe. And they were trying to take over more countries. And the capitalists, which was the Americans. And it was a Cold War. There was no direct fighting, but through other, just like what we're seeing in Ukraine now. But now there's, Russia's trying to get back the countries that they lost. So there's another war going on. But communism was the big threat in America. So Prabhupada saw it on a spiritual platform. Communism was perfect because there's spiritual communism with Krishna in the center and Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Everything belongs to Krishna. That's spiritual communism. But material communism, that was godless. That's why so many of our devotees were put into prison. They died in prison, in mental institutes. Because if you believe in God, you were an enemy to the state, to the government. So Prabhupada, he wanted to preach this Krishna consciousness to save the people from the godlessness of communism, which was becoming very popular at that time. Therefore, he even took the risk of going to Russia later. So he was very concerned that this communism become spiritual communism. Now, as for Sankirtan, when Prabhupada realized how much the people loved singing and dancing, chanting Hare Krishna, well, what did Krishna do? He sent him the most popular singer. At that time in the 60s, the Beatles were worshipped. In fact, the Beatles, they weren't allowed to come to America because they were on their way to make their first tour to America. And one of the Beatles said, because America was practically all Christian, the Beatles said, you know, I think we're more famous than Jesus. So when the priests heard that the Beatles were so proud, they thought they were more famous than Jesus, they blocked them that they couldn't come into America. So the Beatles were, they were still so famous in America, but the Beatles were especially famous in Europe. So George Harrison, he was the most spiritually minded of all of the Beatles. And he came in contact with Sharmasunder, Mukunda, Jamuna, Guru Das, and he funded Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, and then he decided to make this Hare Krishna mantra world famous, and they made the first record. So Srila Prabhupada, through his disciples and through the disciples' preaching, made this Hare Krishna mantra world famous through these records, the Radha Krishna temple album, and there was a single album with just Hare Krishna and the Govinda prayers. Nobody understood what they were singing, but the effects of the Hare Krishna mantra were such, we know those effects, it has nothing to do with material sound vibrations. So this Hare Krishna mantra became world famous at that time, while Prabhupada was making his temples all over the world. So Prabhupada, he was writing also to Sumati Morarji, and she was encouraging him that don't come back to India until you have been successful in your mission. So Prabhupada appreciated that very much. And he asked her, he said, I'm making my society here in America. I want you to make a society in India to help me to establish big temples here, because Prabhupada, in the very beginning, he was penniless. So he thought that the money would have to come from India to make the temples, because that's what the Ramakrishna Mission did. That's what all the yoga societies were doing. And that's what the Christians were also doing. From the core of Christianity, they were sending missionaries and pouring millions and millions of dollars into these missionaries. So Prabhupada thought that just like the Christians were doing, he would have to get money from America, from India. He didn't realize what Krishna had planned. So Prabhupada, he was getting more and more followers, starting the Rath Yatra, teaching them the whole culture. Here we have, on the right-hand side here, we have our devotee Gopal singing. That's Gopal. So all these devotees, he was sending them all over to make new temples and start Rath Yatras, do Sankirtan. And the devotees, they were so fired up, beyond Prabhupada's wildest imagination. They were making, in San Francisco, they made a whole a whole city holiday of Rath Yatra Day. Tens of thousands of people would take part in that Rath Yatra. Then, down the biggest street in New York City, they made Rath Yatra. It was just so successful, what Prabhupada had started, that one little match. It was just taking over all of America, this Hare Krishna society. Everywhere you went, there were the Hare Krishna devotees singing on the streets, in the airports, books were everywhere. And Prabhupada, he was he was relenting because most of his followers at that time were the young people. So he would attend concerts, and he would just, as Prabhupada said in his poem, that Krishna, he was praying to Krishna, I am your puppet. So Prabhupada, any way the devotees wanted him to help in their preaching, he would go from city to city and take part in their wonderful programs. For instance, this big rock concert that they organized in San Francisco. Now, temples. At first, we used to rent small little storefronts and make temples. But the devotees, by that time, they were collecting, and they had brains. So they were thinking, how are we going to make the beautiful temples here in America? So in New Vrindavan, they made the Palace of Gold. Who has gone to New Vrindavan? New Vrindavan, you wouldn't believe it, the beauty and the artistry of that Palace of Gold. So the devotees themselves in America, without any help from India, they were making magnificent temples all over the world now. They were buying palaces, they were buying churches that were now empty, they were building their own palaces, making them into temples. So this was just becoming absolutely beyond Prabhupada's imagination what Krishna had planned when he sent him, when he first landed at Boston. Now, Prabhupada was also writing to his son, because as a father, even when one takes sannyas, they still think of their, in terms of how can I help my family become Krishna conscious. So he encouraged his son that you had so much association with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He even, when they took him to Radhakund, the little boy, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati told him, oh, you're one of the cowherd boys, where are your cows? So he was saying, you help me with my mission. So Prabhupada was attempting in every way possible. Here we have the matchless gift shop, the first temple that Prabhupada established, his chanting, how it came to the newspapers. And Prabhupada called it, he said, I was nothing, I was loitering in the street, one person was here, one person was there, just like one piece of wire lying in one place, a piece of bamboo, a squash, you put it together, the squash becomes the sound chamber, the bamboo, the wire, and then tin, 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 you have a tambura. So he called it the International Society String Band, how he was bringing people all together. And then finally, Prabhupada, he was having so much success in America, and Krishna tells him, come back. Prabhupada said, why should I come back? You sent me here to preach. He said, come back. I kicked you out of Vrindavan. I sent you to America. Now I want you to come back. And when you come back, I will give you a temple 100 times better than your temples in America. So here, this is that temple. We're sitting in that beautiful temple today. Okay. Hare Krishna.